Hey guys, welcome back to That Canadian Podcast. I'm your host and That Canadian, Sam. It has been a while since I've done an episode, and right away, I just want to apologize. The move took a really long time, but unpacking, we finished in about a week. So here we are in the studio, in the new house, all set up, ready to go for a new episode. Now, just because I had all this extra time off doesn't mean I was slacking and not doing anything. I have been making plans for new episodes. I've been doing research. And let me be the first to say, well, actually, I'm the only one to say it. So let me be the one to tell you that I do have quite a few interesting episodes coming up, so make sure you're checking out my Instagram for any updates or any new information coming out from there. Today, I'll be discussing the true story behind the movie Veronica. Veronica was aired on Netflix. I don't know where else it was aired, but when I first saw it, I found it on Netflix, and some people dubbed it the scariest movie ever, going so far as to say that they couldn't even finish watching it. Now, I don't necessarily agree with it being the scariest movie ever. It did scare me a fair bit, and I think it scared my husband too. He made it look like it didn't, but it probably did. But it scared me even more because I've had a couple of my own experiences, we'll say. Well, not a couple. It was really just one event. Anyway, I'll get into the details about that later, but it was freaky, and it was enough to make me not really be the fan of watching it again, at least not watching it by myself. So if you haven't seen the movie, I really recommend going onto Netflix and watching it. I'm pretty sure it's still on there. I wrote this episode a while ago, so I can't be 100% sure, but go find it somewhere, watch it. It's a really good movie. If you haven't seen it, perhaps you should watch the movie first, or maybe just skip this episode, because in talking about the events that's inspired the movie, you'll be getting some spoilers for the actual movie itself. So if you're not ready to hear some spoilers, click away, get out of here right now, go watch the movie and then come back. Okay, so as with any true story, finding information on the internet, you can find basically anything, but that doesn't necessarily make it the actual truth of what actually happened or what was said or whatnot. You have to take the writers and the authors at their word. I do my best to find more genuine articles and information, but I'm not an expert. And there's a chance that some of this stuff isn't correct, but as always, I will do my very best to summarize everything into a general telling of the story while staying as true to the story as possible. The actual story that inspired the movie Veronica is the story of Estefania Gutierrez Lazaro. I cannot roll my R's to save my life, so I really do apologize if I did not say that correctly. The story itself takes place in Madrid, Spain, between 1990 and 1991, and the story doesn't even start with the possession or haunting or whatever you want to call it of Estefania. It actually starts in a hospital room where her grandfather was dying, and this was in 1990. Now, I don't know which month this actually happened in. I did find a couple of different articles saying a couple of different dates, but for now, I'm just going to say in 1990. So her family, Estefania and her family, gathered around her dying grandfather to say their goodbyes. And you would think that this would be a sad event. You know, you're saying goodbye to a loved one on their deathbed, which it might have been sad for some of them, but they weren't the closest with him. He actually despised Estefania, her siblings, and her parents. And when they went to say their goodbyes to him, he wasn't the nicest man, I guess, for someone who was dying. He whispered in Estefania's ear and said,
"If I cannot harm you in this life, I will do it in the next one."
Right. Okay, so grandpa's not the nicest person in the world, not the most loving of all grandpas. I get that. That's apparent. Or in this instance, a grandparent? No? No puns? Okay. So when I found that little tidbit of information, I don't know for sure if it was his dying breath that he said that with, or if he said that and then they left and he died later. I don't know. But either way, it's not the nicest way to remember a grandparent. That is for sure. I don't know what the family would have done to have him hate them so much, let alone what Estefania could have done, but it is what it is, I guess. So months later, after he died, in 1990, Estefania was 15 years old and she took up interest in the occult. Now, I know that a lot of teenagers, or preteens or whatever you want to call them, take up interest in this at one point or another. And so her parents, I guess, maybe did as well. I don't know. But they thought that it was a phase. And after everything was said and done, her parents ultimately blamed this interest for her death. Now, that being said, there was no official cause of death anywhere that I could find. And it's one of those mysterious kinds of deaths. It kind of goes along the same lines as the Annalise episode that I did previously. Mysterious death, there was a believed possession, and despite any medical professional's best efforts, there was no findings for an official cause of death. And I think that's one of the bigger mysteries that will feed into the possibility of it being a possession. And one of the things that people found really interesting about this whole case, this whole possession, this whole story, is that police who wrote the report actually indicated that there was paranormal activity going on in that residence. Now, this was big for a report, for, well, really any case of hauntings or possessions or anything like that, because it is so extremely rare for anyone outside of the group of people experiencing the event to acknowledge that there's paranormal activity or something suspicious that can't be explained. And a lot of times you find that people will try to explain away what's happening, but that's not the case here. Now, before the police were even involved, when her parents said that she took interest in the occult, they didn't really specify, aside from saying she did a couple seances with the Ouija board. We don't know if she tried to follow a certain form of witchcraft, doing spells, just reading kind of spiritual books. I don't know. They never specified that type of thing. But we know for sure that she at least did a couple Ouija board seances. These seances occurred just a few months after her grandpa died, and a situation revolving around her friend's boyfriend's death is what initiated this Ouija board seance. And what happened was that her friend's boyfriend died in a car accident or motorcycle accident. There's a couple different versions out there. And the friend was completely distraught, and so they decided to try to contact him during a seance. And there's people who say that the seance was conducted at the school in the basement, which is what's depicted in the film. There's people who say that it was performed at the friend's house or Veronica's house. But the story I saw the most was saying that the seance took place in the school basement. Before the girls could finish the seance, one of their teachers walked into the basement and caught them. And I don't want to say that the teacher was enraged, but the teacher was mad enough that they took the Ouija board and snapped it in half before the girls could say goodbye. And some sources say that the second the teacher broke the board in half, it started to emit this white, foggy smoke stuff that escaped from the broken pieces. And Estefania inhaled this smoke, this fog. And it was since that day that weird event started taking place in Estefania's life. I've also read in some other sources that the board broke on its own the very second that they had been caught doing the seance, and that it also emitted the smoke and the fog and that Estefania inhaled it. Now, some experts believe that this smoke, this fog that Estefania inhaled is the entity or demon or whatever you want to call it that attached itself to her, and that's how it became attached, is because she inhaled this smoke. I've personally never used a Ouija board. I know people who have. I know people who have made their own, but regardless, there's some unspoken rules that evolve or exist around a Ouija board and using it. And if you buy the game, I guess, from Hasbro, I believe there are rules written for it, but again, I can't be sure because I've never used it. But there are rules that are just kind of unspoken, like I said, and you have to follow them. For example, some that people don't follow is that you're never to use a Ouija board in your home. Another rule is that you are always supposed to say goodbye, no matter what the circumstances are. Now, some people say that you're supposed to keep your hands on the planchet at all times. Some people say you're not supposed to play with the Ouija board by yourself. But everyone that I've ever talked to about it, every reference I've heard about it, always say goodbye. Never leave the board without saying goodbye. It closes the door to whatever you were talking to, and hopefully it'll stop them from attaching themselves to you or bringing in more spirits. Well, as you know, they weren't able to say goodbye. So if this is something that you believe in is real, then you would know that that's most likely what allowed this entity, whatever, to stick around after she inhaled the smoke or whatever. I mean, it may have stayed around anyway, but the fact that she didn't say goodbye or couldn't say goodbye was kind of what sealed the deal. Not long after the failed seance, Estefania started experiencing weird and unexplainable things. And some of these things included, but were not limited to, extreme seizures. Now, these seizures were so intense that some sources said that her eyes went completely white and that she had hallucinations or visions or whatever of shadow figures that would surround her. Her parents even said that she told them that she saw evil figures or shadow people walking around their home and into her room at night, watching her. She randomly got really angry and would scream as loud as she could. She'd attack her family and then pass out. And then when she wakes up, she'd have no memory of what happened. It was like a complete blackout. And this is where it gets really interesting and why I'm doing this episode immediately after the Annalise case. Estefania would bark like a dog. I don't know if you've already listened to my episode on Annalise, but that was one of the things that she did during her alleged possession. Now, I don't know if you believe in this stuff, but Annalise's case took place in Germany. Estefania's case took place in Spain. And if you haven't noticed, there is a little bit of space between the two areas, and this happened quite some time ago. So the fact that both cases had the same, well, not the exact same, but similar signs of possession, I just found it really interesting because there was a lot of time between the two cases, for one. And two, the fact that they had not the same symptoms, but like the same symptoms, you know? They both experienced epileptic type symptoms. They both barked like dogs. I don't know. I thought it was kind of crazy how the two were so similar, but so different. And I thought it was really interesting to share with you guys. I want to know what you think about it, actually. Go to thatcanadianpodcast.ca, find today's episode, and go into the comment section and tell me your thoughts. And if you don't want to do it there, you can go on my Instagram, thatcanadianpodcast, and you can leave your thoughts and opinions in the comments for today's episode. Anyway, I don't know. I thought it was crazy because Google wasn't even invented until 98. So even if they had some way of accessing the information, it's not like today where they could be like, what are the signs of possession? And then they like look it up and they find all these answers. And then they're like, oh yeah, this happened, that happened. Oh, and this too. Oh, that happened? Okay, yeah, that happened to me too. You know what I mean? Like they can't just find the information and say, oh, well, that's what happened to me. It's something that they just experienced. So I found that to be at least genuine. Anyways, her parents took her to see several doctors, just like Annalise's parents, and not one of them could find anything physically wrong with Estefania. No one could explain her anger, why she suddenly felt sick, why she was having seizures, why she would bark like a dog. There was no medical explanation for anything that was happening to her, which just, again, feeds into the idea of it being a possession. And someone once asked her to explain or describe what was happening to her, and all she could say or all she could explain was that it was like something evil and dark was holding on to her, and whatever it was wouldn't let her go. In August of 1991, she told her family that the shadow figures that were following her around and haunting her were telling her to go with them. Days later, unfortunately, Estefania passed away under unusual circumstances 6 months after using the Ouija board. And like I said before, her parents had no choice but to believe that her death was a result of using the Ouija board because the doctor performing her autopsy was unable to find a clear cause of death. After her death, her family experienced some extreme paranormal activity in their home. They would hear Estefania's horrifying scream coming from her room, the one that she would do whenever she was in her fits of rage. They also heard the grandfather's laugh emanating from her room, which is another reason why I think that her grandfather was the one who was attached to her and not necessarily a demon. They would hear these screams and this laughter, and they would go to her room and open the door, and obviously there would be nothing there, and the noises, the screaming and the laughing, would suddenly stop. There was also temperature fluctuations, and they also heard constant non-stop whispering. There would be doors that would open on their own and slam shut. There would be interference with all kinds of electronics around the house. So I guess maybe like the radio or the TV would act up, lights would turn on and off, and they started experiencing what she was seeing and hearing before she passed away. Some of the sources that I came across went so far as to say that her little brother was picked up by an invisible force and thrown across the room, her sister's dolls would come flying off the shelves by themselves, and dresser drawers would open and shut on their own. All of this activity is said to have taken place in the middle of the night. And one night, when Estefania's mom was asleep, she was attacked by a shadow figure, and Estefania's dad couldn't do anything about it or couldn't help her at all. In the report, her mom was quoted saying that she felt pressure on top of her chest, and she said to her husband that someone was there, she just couldn't see them, and then she felt a pair of hands grab her feet. Apparently, this went on for over a year after Estefania's death, and eventually the family had had enough, and they were concerned about all of the activity that went on in their house, so they eventually just called the police. Now, I don't know if I would call the police, personally. I don't know what they'd be able to do for me, but in this case, that's the only choice they had, so that's what they did. And for the police officers that showed up to the home, they had a paranormal experience the first and only visit they made. This is where that police report comes in that I was talking about earlier. So the police officer who wrote this report said that they experienced, heard, witnessed, however you want to word it, loud noises, scratches on the walls, shadow figures in their peripheral vision. They even witnessed invisible forces violently shoving anyone who tried to enter Estefania's bedroom. The creepiest thing they had witnessed was a crucifix that was hung on the wall move completely on its own as it slowly bent and broke into pieces. And then on the wall behind it, it looked like there was an old blood stain. And just as they noticed this blood stain, a framed picture of Estefania fell off a shelf completely on its own, burst into flames beneath the glass and the frame itself. When I was first looking into this story, like the true story behind the movie, I was reading about what the police had documented in their report. And, you know, hearing noises, scratches on the walls, whatever, that stuff is very scary to see. And I was very surprised that they included that in the report because, you know, obviously police officers will try and find a logical explanation before jumping to, it's a ghost. But what I find most interesting is this next part. And I say that because it feels like this is something that someone would want to not admit to witnessing only because it opens them up for criticism. The senior officer who was present at the Gutierrez home said that it was the most horrendous and terrifying call that he had ever been sent on. Now, he was accompanied with two other officers, but they couldn't even stand being in the home with him for very long because they felt nauseous and dizzy and terrified. So a lot of this stuff was him experiencing it on his own, which is why he wrote the report. Luckily for the Gutierrez family, once they moved, the paranormal events stopped. Like completely stopped, almost as if this evil entity was attached to the home where Estefania lived the last few months of her life. And since they left the house, there's been no reports of any hauntings or possessions or anything of the sort from the family or families who have lived in this place since then. After seeing the movie and reading the story behind the movie, a lot of people come to the conclusion that she was either possessed, that her grandfather cursed her and her family, or that it was a poltergeist haunting the family, or maybe even that it was the grandfather who was a poltergeist haunting the family, not just a random poltergeist. Either way, whatever conclusion you come to from this story, whether you believe in possession or not, the fact of the matter is, it's a creepy story that serves as a good, you know, blanket warning to not use a Ouija board whatsoever. But it's also super freaky in terms of the eerily similar symptoms of possession between this case and the Annalise case. A young girl lost her life, whether it was because she was possessed or because she was very sick. But the events that took place in the home were scary enough for the family to call the police and for the police to include their very short one-time experiences in an official police report. Now, earlier, when I started the episode, I had said that I had a personal story surrounding the movie or the story or whatever. And no, I was not possessed. And no, I'm not saying that this is for sure what it was, but it's, if it was a coincidence, it's one hell of a coincidence. I'm just going to say that, okay? Now, if you're new to the podcast, you may not know, but if you're a returning listener, you should know by now that I'm into the deep, dark, and creepy stuff out there. Like, I enjoy true crime. I enjoy scary stories. I like to hear about conspiracy theories. I don't believe in them all. I may not believe in any of them, but I still find them interesting to listen to. And one of the things that I love doing every year is for the month of October, I do my best to watch one scary movie a day. And in 2020, I decided I'm going to watch Veronica. I've seen it before. Not a big deal. Nice to rewatch a scary movie every once in a while. What a mistake. Friends, I rarely have things like this happen. Well, actually, that's a lie. I've experienced quite a few ghosty type things, but I haven't had this type of thing happen before. So my husband and I were watching the movie. Well, actually, it was just me. He was sitting there on his phone, but he indulges me for the month of October and lets me watch all the spooky movies that he's not interested in watching. Anyway, we were sitting there watching the movie, enjoying not doing anything, and there's this particular scene in Veronica closer to the end. And again, if you have listened to this whole thing so far and you haven't gotten any spoiler information, it definitely is. There's a scene closer towards the end where, you know, all the shit's gone down and Veronica is walking through her apartment and she hears one of the toys going off and she walks into the room. I think it was her bedroom. Her bedroom or her sibling's bedroom? Anyway, she walks into the room and the lights are flashing, and I think it's like blues and oranges and reds. Anyway, the lights are flashing and all of a sudden there's like this shadow that starts walking around the room, and it's like the shadow person, and they're walking around the room touching random things, and these random things catch fire. I have goosebumps right now talking about it. Thank God I don't live in that house anymore. But so as this is unfolding on my TV screen, my smoke alarms go off right as the fire start in the movie. Now, you're probably thinking, well, it's just a coincidence that it happened at the same time, blah, blah, blah. And you're probably very right. But hear me out, okay? Hear me out. We haven't had these smoke alarms long. We've had them, I don't know, like 3-ish years, four? No, we've been here. We've had them for about 4 years. They expire after 7, okay? And they've never gone off without explanation. There was once where I burned something in the oven and the smoke alarms went off for that. But other than that, they haven't gone off. And when this happened, my husband and I freaked out. I instantly started recording it and taking pictures and blah, blah, blah. And if you go to my Instagram, there's only one highlight and it's of this, and it's called Demons with a question mark. And I'm going to put them on my website as well, just in case you don't have Instagram. But I posted a few pictures and some videos, and you can really tell that I'm kind of that aging millennial because I clearly had not used Instagram stories or whatever very often and struggled with the length and duration of the videos. Anyway, you can see, you know, I was clearly freaked out. There was no logical explanation for this to happen. Now, I put the experience on Facebook, I shared it with my friends, and there was a lot of mixed things coming back to us, but the main ideas or opinions or whatever you want to call it were people saying that the batteries were dying. Well, no, they weren't dying. They had been replaced within the last month and a half-ish, and they've never randomly acted up before because the batteries were low. So that's not a good explanation. Somebody said it's just bad timing. Yeah, okay, sure, I'll give you that. But in the past 5 years that we've, well, 4 or 5 years that we've owned the fire alarms, it's one hell of a coincidence that they decided to pick that exact moment to malfunction when everything in the movie started lighting on fire. And they haven't malfunctioned like that since, even with low batteries. So, I don't know. Other people said that it's possible that it happened because the alarms could have been covered with dust and that's why they malfunctioned, and that they typically malfunction when they're covered in dust. Again, you know, good point, but this hasn't happened in the 4 or 5 years since we've had it. It hasn't happened before this event and it hasn't happened after. And yes, we don't dust them every day, but we did just change the batteries like a month and a half before this happened, so it's not like enough dust could have accumulated to cause this to happen. Another person said that they could be expired and that's why it happened. Yes, that makes sense. That could happen to other people, but we have like 2+ years left on them, so I doubt that that was the case. The last theory that made the most sense is someone saying that one of my dogs farted, and if you met them and you were around them, you would know why that is such a possibility. It is awful. Anyway, but yeah, that's the story. It's not super scary like the movie, but it definitely terrified me and my husband, and I was apprehensive in finishing watching the movie, but I did. And yeah, I have the whole thing on Instagram in my stories or my highlights, and I'll put it on the website too for today's episode. Make sure you check it out and let me know what you think. There's some pictures, there's some videos, and there's a picture, and I'm clearly scared. And I'm also clearly an aging millennial who got frustrated in there as well, but you know, what can you do? And as I said earlier, to make sure you're up to date with all the episodes that are coming out, I'll be posting updates on my Instagram. And if you don't have Instagram, my Instagram actually links to my website, so you should be able to see what I post on my website for updates as well. Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. It really does mean a lot to me that you stop by every week and you listen in, so thank you so much. This has been That Canadian Podcast. I am That Canadian. And stay safe out there.